Oh, such a clutch off-season pickup, Dave.
I know, right? I was worried we'd bring back the same team.
Oh, no, I meant those blackout motorized shades. MVP of the room.
Blinds.com made it crazy affordable to replace our old blinds.
Hard to install?
No, it's easy. Even you could do it.
Nice.
I installed these and then got some for my mom, too.
What, you fly across the country to do the install?
Nope. Blinds.com can do it all. All she had to do was pick what she wanted. She talked to a design consultant for free and scheduled a professional measure and install.
Look at you, a Hall of Fame son.
Oh, I just picked the winning team. They're the number one online retailer of custom window coverings in the world.
Oh, Blinds.com is the GOAT.
The GOAT.
Shop Blinds.com right now and get up to 45% off select styles and a 100% satisfaction guarantee. Save up to 45% at Blinds.com. Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Flurries of fun await this winter in Indiana. Feel the rush of the Midwest's only refrigerated toboggan run. Ski down snow-covered slopes and marvel at frozen waterfalls on a winter hike. When it's time to unwind, from outdoor fun to indoor escapes, your perfect winter getaway starts in Indiana. Plan your trip today at inindiana.com/winter.
Yeah, sure thing.
Hey, you sold that car yet?
Yeah, sold it to Carvana.
Oh, I thought you were selling to that guy.
The guy who wanted to pay me in foreign currency, no interest, over 36 months? Yeah, no. Carvana gave me an offer in minutes, picked it up, and paid me on the spot. It was so convenient.
Just like that?
Yeah.
No hassle?
None.
That is super convenient.
Sell your car to Carvana and swap hassle for convenience. Pickup fees may apply.
It is 12:09. You are listening to the Shaletta Show at News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. Josh Wheeler is here producing this show, and Al Shock is in the newsroom bringing you the latest on news, weather, and information for you and your family so that you can make the right choices and decisions about whether or not you put that jacket on before you walk out the door. And I'm just walking out of the Minneapolis Club. This morning, I had the pleasure of hosting 200 black women. We had something called a brunch for black women. My production company, ShalettaMakesMeLaugh.com, put it on because I looked on social media and I saw so many black women who were in despair, who felt rejected, who had lost hope that they would ever see an African-American female president in their lifetime. And I thought, I gotta do something. And so since I'm a member at the club, I booked a room and I invited 200 of my best and closest friends to join me for a brunch. And we got a DJ and we had food and drinks and mimosas and wine. And we had a good time. And so many of these women who came in almost in tears, frustrated, feeling rejected, feeling like they had not been accepted by this country once again, left smiling and laughing and high and lifted up. My purpose for this event was to help black women choose joy. And for 2 hours, we laughed and celebrated one another and looked at the accomplishments instead of what didn't happen. My great-grandmother, Mary Freddie Welcome, picked cotton in Opelousas, Louisiana. Her father was a sharecropper. She was actually born into slavery. And on Tuesday, me, her great-granddaughter, I was able to pick a black woman to be president of the United States of America. That's three generations away. That's something to be celebrated. So I wanted to remind these women of all we've accomplished and everything we've done so that they could leave feeling hopeful for tomorrow. But as we look at the hope, we got to ask what happened. And I got to go to somebody I can trust, somebody that I know, somebody who's been covering politics locally and nationally for decades. And so I'm asking who my kids call Uncle Eric. Eric Escala, a WCCO radio alum, is joining me on the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. And Eric, so many of the black women in the room at my brunch this morning were scratching their heads, patting the lace front wigs, wanting to know, what happened? Where do we fall short? Where do we go wrong?
Well, Shaletta, I think one thing is clear, that there wasn't too many generations ago where 200 black women wouldn't have been allowed in a private club.
Especially that club. We talked about that. We talked about the fact that it was not one generation ago that black women would not be allowed in the Minneapolis club. But we walked through the front door, went up on the third floor, played Frankie Beverly and Maze and Prince, and danced for 2 hours. That could not have happened just a few years ago.
Well, and I think I saw a chart this week that said if women only were allowed to vote on last Tuesday, Vice President Harris would have received more than 400 electoral votes. You need 270. Mm. Of course, I was informed that men were allowed to vote.
Yeah, same.
And I wonder the role of black and Hispanic young men. Mm. Sounds like they, I think Harris, or Trump carried the women, regardless of race, by like 52%. And a lot of the black men and Hispanic men went for Trump. And I don't know if that's racism, sexism, whatever you want to say, but it's an intriguing situation.
Well, you know, the elephant in the room that nobody wants to talk about is the fact that black women do not get the support that they need from black men. This has been going on for generations. Whether you are talking about black women preachers, black women executives. I talked with Brian McDaniels about this, Eric, just last week. And nobody wants to talk about this. I'm really the only one talking about it, except for Barack Obama, when he led everybody into the family group chat and said black women need to support this black woman. But, you know, Malcolm X had a quote, and it resonates today as it did when he said it back in the 1960s, is that the most disrespected person in America is the black woman. And for all of the accomplishments and accolades and connections and experience, you know, Vice President Harris is still seen as less than. And so the reason that I did this event today at the Minneapolis Club was so many black women feel like, well, if she's not enough, how can I ever be?
Well, what is your experience? You kind of cracked that ceiling and made it to the mainstream and made color not as big a deal. What was your secret?
I'm still trying. There's no secret. There's systems in place, and I was chatting about this with Chad Hartman yesterday. There are systems in place set up to make sure that black women don't succeed. And so oftentimes, Eric, people disguise it in qualifications. Well, you don't have a degree. Well, you don't have a graduate degree. Well, you don't have enough experience. Well, you know, you haven't worked here long enough. You're just not a good fit. And really what they want to say is, we don't want a black woman. I've dealt with it here at WCCO Radio, the station that I'm working at right now. You don't have
but you overcame. How did you overcome?
Allies, people like Chad Hartman, who will go in the then boss's office and throw a chair against the wall and get written up and threaten to be fired, who say, you know what? She deserves an opportunity. She's been here for 5 years. She's got 20 years of broadcasting experience. She's got an Emmy and 2 Edward R. Murrow Awards. Give her a chance. And without an ally, without a man, white man going in there, Eric, nobody is listening to the Shaletta Show right now. Same thing with my company. ShalettaMakesMeLaugh.com. Eric was in business for an entire year before we made a dime. And Blois Olson called me and said, your next 5 meetings, I want to be in. And I said, for what? He said, because until a white man says that you are okay and they co-sign on you, no company's going to partner with you. A year we worked like a dog without pay. And the minute Blois Olson went into those meetings with me, Eric, I got Hy-Vee, I got General Mills, I got Target, I got United Healthcare. Companies were lining up. In fact, there's an article in the Twin Cities Business Journal that says companies are lining up to partner with Shaletta. That did not happen.
Next time we have lunch then.
Yeah, right, right. But that didn't happen until an ally, a white man, went to bat for me. And we don't have enough of that.
Well, Charity begins at home. I'm kind of curious about this issue in the black community.
I'm here to tell you, black men do not support black women the way that they need to.
And well, what's the answer to that?
The answer to that is we have to have the conversation. We've got to start talking about it. And because we haven't talked about it, Eric, it showed up in the voting booth. It showed up in the numbers. It showed up on the graphs and the charts. And everybody was surprised except black women. Everybody was surprised except us, because we know for a fact that African-American men do not support us. And because nobody is talking about it, we are not going to be able to tackle this problem. It's the elephant in the room. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Madam C.J. Walker. She's the first female millionaire of any color. She had her hair care product, the Walker hair care line, and she made $1 million. She went from being the child of enslaved parents. She was born 1 year after slavery ended, and she lived next to J.D. Rockefeller before she died. And when she was building her company, she went to Booker T. Washington and ask him to endorse her products and endorse her company so that she could get investors to get a factory. He told her the black man must be lifted up first and then the black woman.
Hmm. Do you think it's progress, though, that a woman of color was the vice president and ran for president?
Absolutely. And that's the reason that I had this brunch this morning at the Minneapolis Club, because I want us to see the progress that we've made. But we should have been able to cross the finish line. And I need people to understand and know, and this is something I was trying to explain to my friend Chad Hartman yesterday on his show for Feisty Friday, is that this country is a lot more racist than he realizes. I have to tell my son, Eric, at St. Cloud State University, not to go off campus. He just wants to go and ride his skateboard to the Raising Cane's 2 blocks away from his dorm room. He wants to sit in there and be loud and chew with his mouth open and, you know, laugh and talk with his friends. But because of the text messages they're receiving, he can't leave campus because he's not safe.
Well, is there some silver bullet, or is this something that has to kind of be built a brick at a time?
I believe that people have to start being real about what's going on in this country. I believe that white women have a role to play in that. And actions have consequences. We're going to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about actions, consequences, and why I blocked you on Facebook on The Shaletta Show. Some woman needed to put black women together so that we could encourage one another, support one another, and celebrate each other. And I'm guessing that's me, because this morning I had a brunch with black women over at the Minneapolis Club, sponsored by my company, ShalettaMakesMeLaugh.com. 200 black women came together. They came in frustrated, dejected, feeling a sense of grief and loss, because Kamala Harris's loss was their loss. Had she won, there would have been some pep. There would have been smiles. There would have been a feeling that finally black women have been accepted in the country that they love and helped to build. But when she lost, we took that so personally. And so I said, you know what? We need to create a space, a safe space where black women can come together and love one another and celebrate each other. We had black female mental health professionals on hand. We had prayer warriors, we had music, we had food, we had crafting, we had cake decorating, we had yoga. It was a beautiful time with 200 black women from throughout the state of Minnesota over at the Minneapolis Club. I think we I think we met the quota this morning, Eric Escala. I don't know if there have ever been 200 black women in the Minneapolis club before today. I think we set a record. Should we call Guinness Book?
Well, no doubt it's a record, I would think. Would a next step be to have black women and white women in some kind of a joint meeting?
See, I don't know, because we mad at our white sister friends, because somebody's lying to us. Somebody's not telling the truth, because Trump got a large number of white female voters. And
52% of the total, I think.
And so we felt betrayed by our white sister friends. And so what happened was, on election night, when the votes came in and our white sister friends who follow us on social media started saying, praise God, Trump won, started speaking ill about Kamala Harris and saying some pretty derogatory remarks about her as a black woman, we start blocking them. Present company included, Eric. And I woke up on Wednesday to direct messages and emails and text messages saying, did you block me? Can you please unblock me? You really hurt my feelings. I thought we were friends. And I had to take a moment before I responded, Eric, and I said, you know, I thought we were friends, too. But when you voted against the Department of Education being funded so that my special needs kids could have the services so that they won't regress, when you voted against the people who said the black woman who was running for president with a law degree and decades of experience in politics was trash, had a low IQ, and those things we took personally as black women, then, you know, when you voted for that, we took that personal. And so actions have consequences. You got black girl. And you won't be back again. And so I had some women, like, literally crying. You know, please, I thought, you know, I really want, no, because, you know, for so long, black women took a lot. We said, okay, you know what, we're going to put our feelings aside. We're going to go ahead and do this for country. And now we're like, you know what, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. And so you're going to stay blocked.
What, do you think the DFL is doing enough?
No. No, they are not. No, they are not. They are not doing enough.
What could they do better?
Here's what they could do better. They can have a real, authentic relationship with the people in this community, with the people in Minnesota. Not performative, not at election time, but on a routine, regular, everyday basis. Don't just show up when it's time to vote. I was getting text messages every 3 minutes from the DFL, right? I have not gotten one since the election. Let's have a real relationship. Let's have a real commitment. How about y'all show up at events? How about y'all not come around to our church every 4 years? My husband, ex-husband, sent me a note on Sunday. I wasn't at church. He said, Peggy Flanagan is here. She should be at our church on a regular basis. If we're going to really have a relationship, if we're going to really step out as partners in this whole thing we call democracy.
Has diversity, equity, and inclusion helped?
You know, I'm just...
DEI?
I'm just so tired of... I'm so tired of it. I'm tired of being nice, so I'm just going to be honest with you because you're Uncle Eric. My kids love you. I love you, and I feel like this is a safe space. Just so happens that, you know, thousands of people are listening to our conversation right now. A lot of it has been performative. And the one thing that young black people can sniff out is BS. They don't have the brand loyalty that we have. And that doesn't just go for politics. That goes for anything. They're not going to just do Comcast. They're not going to just do Xcel Energy. They're going to go and find the company that is supporting them. They're going to find the place that they're going to save a couple of dollars. They're cutting the cord. They're, you know, using solar energy. They're not doing politics or business as usual. And we have not caught up to that. And so what we have to do is have real relationships with people, not just when it's election time, but every day.
You know, you lobby the legislature as much as anybody, and I wonder if you feel like the Posse Caucus, People of Color Caucus, the BIPOC Caucus, and it's, I think they're mostly women involved in those two groups in the Minnesota House and Senate. What do you make of that development?
I think that we're new, and we're doing what we know to do. It's like being a new mama. It's only so much you know. You ain't never had a kid before. You're doing what you can until a seasoned veteran mother comes in your house and says, you know what? You need to let that baby sleep in his own bed. You know what? That child is ready to be potty trained. You know what? It's time to take the pacifier away. I think he's going to be okay. You know what? Let him cry himself to sleep. Black women, indigenous women, Hispanic women, Asian women being in positions of leadership and politics, this is new for us. And we don't have anybody leading and guiding the way. And so
Ilhan Omar got 75% of the vote.
Yeah, yeah. And she's in a friendly district. But, you know, we've got to be very careful because, you know, what's going to happen next time? What you know, where's that percentage going to be in the next election?
Well, you have a roadmap about these things. What are next steps, as far as you're concerned, to address this issue?
We got to come together. We got to figure out
what does that mean exactly?
We got to sit down and talk to some real people, not the people who are paid to strategize. We got to talk to some real folks who really voted the other way and figure out what do we do wrong? How do we get it right? What do we do better next time? What did you feel like you were missing? Where did we miss the mark? And you know, I can't, we have to really realize that, you know, racism and sexism plays a part in this. That there are men and women out there who don't want to see a black woman become the president of the United States of America. They're not ready for that.
Do you think that's as simple as it gets, or is there more of a complication than that?
I think that is probably 80% of it, honestly. Now, could they have done some things better with the campaign? Of course. Could they have, you know, strategized differently to meet the young people where they are, the young voters where they are? Absolutely. But I think 80%
of
it was
Megan Thee Stallion and Beyonce and the women of color celebrities that spoke. That apparently wasn't persuasive.
You know what? You always do this to me. Let me tell you what you're not going to do. You're not going to come on my show and interview me. So you always slip this in. You slick and you ask me questions. And then you get off the phone. And then 2 days later, I realize that you spent your time asking me questions. And I'm supposed to ask you questions. So now you tell me, do you think Beyonce and Megan Thee Stallion and Cardi B had a positive impact on the election? Or do you think that people were like, you know what? I'm just not swayed by the celebrities.
Well, I think Hulk Hogan and Kid Rock did pretty well on the Republican side.
They did.
Well, I don't know. I you're much more interesting than I am. So,
well, you know, I think that, you know, anytime you have somebody who has influence as well as power in specific communities, I think that they, if they have a voice and a platform and they're willing to say, I co-sign or I endorse, you give them that opportunity, right? Just like they gave Hulk Hogan and Kid Rock those opportunities, then you have to give them to Eminem and Cardi B and Meg Thee Stallion.
Not to ask you another question, but I'm going to, you've been introduced at the State of the State address by Governor Walz back in the day. And I wonder what you see as his role now coming back for at least 2 more years as governor.
I think we got a lot of bridge building to do. I think we got a lot of work to do. I think we got a lot of listening to do. I think we got a lot of collaborating and partnerships to form. Because, you know, it is not business as usual. We see that. It is, we got to listen, we got to work, we got to partner, we got to try to find some common ground because it is not the way that it used to be. Yesterday's price is not today's price. This is a new day, a new time. And again, I can't say that I'm hopeful. I can't say that I'm hopeful when I have to tell my son not to go out at night, that he is not safe off campus, when I have to think maybe we need a green book again, when I have to wonder about our middle school and high school students and college students who are getting threatening messages about going back to a plantation. These messages did not come a month ago. They did not come a week ago. They came after Donald Trump was elected. And so what does that say?
For folks that are listening, the green book was a listing of places friendly to blacks as they traveled. Was it mainly in the South or
mainly
all over?
It was all over, but mainly in the South as entertainers like Nat King Cole and Etta James and Billie Holiday would perform. They would have to refer to these books so that they would know where to go, where they were safe, the Klan was not going to try and lynch them or burn their car up or threaten to kill them. They would go by those green books. Those were their Bibles. And it's sad that it seems like we're heading in that direction, and that's not the place that we're supposed to be. Eric, I should not be giving my son the same speech that I heard my great-grandmother give my uncle about going in the house before it gets dark and not being downtown after sundown and making sure you stay in a certain specific area and making sure you have people around you. And those are not conversations. My son should be able to walk around Stearns County, if he's not doing anything wrong, free and clear and unbothered. And he's not able to do that with these text messages and the climate that we have in this country. Okay, we got to take a quick commercial break. But when we come back, more with Uncle Eric Escala on The Shaletta Show. He think he going to come on my show and interview me and ask me questions. I don't think so. He tricks me like that every time. He's really good. I'm talking about Eric Escala. He's joining us courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. Okay, Eric, you got to tell me, where did the Democrats go wrong in this presidential election?
Oh, I think the coalition that they put together is pretty fractious, and it isn't a majority position of the country. The country is realigning toward a more conservative bent, and to the extent that the Democrats have the coalition that they have, it's not in favor. I talking to Republicans this past week, they just felt that a lot of the left is condescending to those folks and some of the social issues they don't like, and they feel like they're looked down upon by white liberals who have a college education, and I just think it's but you know, the pendulum swings back and forth. You don't remember this, but in 1964, Barry Goldwater won, a Republican, won one state against Lyndon Johnson. 4 years later, Richard Nixon, another Republican, is the president. So it's just as an example, and there's other examples as well. This just was the Democrats just didn't meet the public mood, I think it's fair to say.
Now, how much do you think racism and sexism played a role in this?
Well, I think if you're going to look at that as the end all and be all, that's a societal thing much bigger than politics. And you've got to maybe time and younger people will address that issue. But I want to go back and say that 200 women, black women at the Minneapolis Club is a fairly good milestone, don't you think?
I do.
What about what they call the white limousine liberals?
What's a white limousine liberal? What is that? I don't know what that is.
Well, that's the well-meaning, Kenwood Democrats.
I think that we've got to do more. After the election, Sean, my ex-husband, came by to visit, and he said, if you're dealing with a bully, you got to punch him in the mouth, and I don't think they landed. I don't think they landed a punch.
The DFL coalition of blacks and Somalis and Hispanic and LGBTQ and wealthier white liberals, is that a fractious caucus? Is that hard to hold together, or is that pretty united under one flag?
I think that's pretty united under one flag, but I think we need some good new leadership, and I think we need some new good direction. And like you said, I think we need to read the room and see what people are saying. And either we're going to hold true to our values and hope they come over here, or we're going to have to bend and figure out how we're going to reach the people that we did not reach this election. Otherwise, we're going to be dealing with the same thing over and over again.
you're not buying that inflation was a problem. Kamala Harris won voters under that made under $25,000 a year and that made over $100,000 a year. And President Trump got everything in the middle.
I'm not buying it. I'm buying that that's an excuse. You know, as a black woman, I've been told you don't have enough degrees, you don't have enough experience, you don't have enough credentials, you don't, your resume is not right, you're not a good fit, when really they just wanted to say, we don't want a black woman. And you can disguise it and cloak it and you can fix it up and say it nicely, but sometimes it's just the fact that they don't want a black woman in the room.
So are you saying that all the efforts to diversify and diversity and getting more people included from underserved parts of the state, that's window dressing? Is that kind of what you're saying?
I'm saying it's well-meaning, and we've made strides, but I'm saying we have a long way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Well, I have had fun talking to you. Next time you come on my show, I'm going to ask you this again, but you're real disrespectful. Don't interview me. Let me interview you. You are the guest. I am the host. That seems to, like, not be something that you understand on a regular basis. So I'm going to be more prepared.
Learner.
I'm going to be
I'm
more
a lifelong
prepared.
Learner.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to learn anything by I'm going to learn everything by asking you questions, not by you interviewing me.
Mm-hmm. I love you. Thank you for being on the show.
When do you want Almanac next?
Next month. And I'll have something absolutely fabulous for you.
Folks can look on the website and see her getting cleaning up the house for her mom.
That was funny. I love you.
How do you video all that?
I'm amazing. I'm just freaking amazing.
Well,
yeah.
Glad you could have me on the show. Thanks for having me.
All right. You have a great weekend. You guys stick around. There's more to come. It's 12:50. You are listening to The Shaletta Show on News Talk 830 WCCO Radio, your good neighbor station. Middle schoolers, high schoolers, college students, including my son Andrew, receive messages on their cell phones, their personal cell phones, about going back to the plantation. About reporting to duty for picking cotton after Donald Trump was elected. How do we support our kids who are just trying to study for college, are just trying to live their life as they look down at their phone and see these hateful, racist messages? I'm asking Brandon Jones that question. He's joining us courtesy of the John Schuster Caldwell Banker Hotline. He is the executive director of the Minnesota Children's Mental Health Association. Brandon, I know you've been keeping up with this story. I know you have been pulled in every different direction from national as well as local media outlets about how we support our children who are getting these messages at all hours of the night.
Absolutely, I have, and greetings. I hope that people are doing as well as they can be given the times that we're in. It has been a very interesting response to our election. Yes, children and teens, interestingly enough, have been targeted and have had various different, you know, hateful messages sent to them, and people are responding. And I think the thing I'll lead off with is to understand that these are just targeted attacks to rile up emotions. And none of this is based in reality. And that's one of the things we have to keep in mind. But it's still painful and it still hurts.
So how do we start having these conversations with our kids? Because it's not like we can act like it's not happening. They're bringing us their phones. They're calling us saying, Mom, look at this. Mom, I just sent you a text message that I just got. What is going on? What is happening? Because they're not as tuned into the news as we are. And they think, Brandon, right. This stuff is real.
Right. Yes. And as parents, hopefully we are in a space where we don't believe that it's real and we are offering an opportunity to have a conversation. I like to look at the bright side on the situation is this is opening a time for you to have a dialogue with your children that you might not have actually been able to have. And your child is bringing it to you. That opens up an opportunity to, one, educate your children about the realities of discrimination, whether it's racial discrimination, sexual discrimination, or other forms. It also gives you an opportunity to build a bond and rapport with your child and allows them to know that if anything ever happens, that they can always come talk to you and they don't have to deal with it themselves or with their friends. But it also creates an opportunity for you to have a comfortable or brave enough space for these dialogues to happen. It's more important than ever for us to talk to our children, especially when they have 24/7 access to all types of things, whether the access comes directly to them like this, like these text messages, or they go out and seeking it. We want to make sure that we're in the know of what our children are exposed to or what's being exposed to them. And unfortunately, this has happened to so many people, but it does create an opportunity of growth from my standpoint for us.
Now, help me understand this. How do we support them when we're scared? You know, when my son Absolutely. Called me yesterday, Brandon, I didn't, as a parent, I didn't even know what to say because it's Friday yeah. night. He's a college student. He just wants to go hang out with his friends, ride a skateboard over to the Raising Cane's, which is, half mile away from campus. Eat, laugh, chew with food with his mouth open and have a good time. And I have to tell him, son, I don't know if you're safe. Stay on campus. Don't leave. As he watches Brandon, his white friends drive off to have a good time. He's got to wave bye.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So two questions here built into what has happened. The first question is, what are parents supposed to do if they're scared? If parents are scared, again, I think that we need to base ourselves in some reality that there may be things that can take place, but I don't think the threat levels are actually as high as we may assume. Now, messages are being sent. It is happening. But we should be able to say, we live in a world where a lot of things can happen, unfortunately, but we have to be able to have enough resiliency and belief in ourselves that things will be okay and continue to move forward. And if parents are scared, I would encourage parents to rally together, connect with other parents that you feel like you have some support, and strategize how do you keep yourself and your children or your family safe, given the spaces that you're in. Trust the people that you know and build relationships with people that you don't if you feel like they are comfortable enough to build with. And I think that's one of the best things we do. We have to continue to build community through these tough times and understand that if we stay siloed and we don't connect with friends, what ultimately ends up happening is we'll continue to fuel some of that fear and we won't be able to get out and understand that things can and will be okay if we do it together and not do it in isolation. So that's part one. Part two is, your son choosing to opt out of having fun with his friends. And again, I think we're going to have to encourage our children more than ever to continue to try to prosper and live their lives. Some of the threats that have been sent to children, these are things that have happened decades ago. We are in a different space and time in the world. I don't think we're going to go back to those times. But it's important for us to understand that that doesn't mean that they can't be harmed. That doesn't mean that there is not a psychological injury that can take place. So we have to continue to, pump encouragement and hope into our children and allow them to not fear anything that may come their way and to continue to try to prosper and have joy within their lives to the best of their ability.
Brandon, before you go, you have to tell folks where they can find you. My DMs, all of a sudden I got 7 messages, and those were from people who want to reach out to you. My phone is going off. I'm sure those Twitter messages want to know how they can find you as well.
Absolutely. I am by Brandon, BrandonJones, on all social media platforms, just by Brandon Jones on all social platforms. You can reach out directly to me on my website. That's www.jegna.org. And if you need resources, definitely check out my organization, Minnesota Association for Children's Mental Health. We have tons of resources to help you through various different mental and emotional health things. Our website is macmh.org. That's macmh.org.
Thank you so much for being here, Brandon. Again, I know you're being pulled in different directions from national as well as local media outlets for the insight and wisdom that...
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+.
Before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recaps. And after that, we're going to keep going as we recap every episode of season 2.
The Severance podcast with Ben Stiller and Adam Scott is presented by State Farm. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Listen and follow now on Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Head to Safeway this week for these amazing digital deals for members. Coca-Cola, 7-Up, Dr. Pepper, and Polar Seltzer, selected varieties and sizes, buy 2 and get 3 free of equal or lesser value, plus CRV. Limit 3 free items. USDA Choice Bone-In Ribeye Steak, $7.97 per pound.
Limit 2 packages. Creamy Hass avocados, 77 cents each. Limit 4 items. Visit Safeway.com for more details. See you in the aisles.
Hey, I'm Ben Stiller.
I'm Adam Scott.
And we make a TV show called Severance. On January 17th, Severance is back for season 2 on Apple TV+. And we can't wait for you guys to see it.
And before the premiere, Ben and I are going to be binging season 1 and putting out daily recap podcasts.
Yep. Each weekday beginning January 7th, we'll be dropping an episode featuring exclusive behind-the-scenes tidbits and brilliant insights from our cast and crew and us.
Patricia Arquette, Britt Lauer, Zach Cherry, John Turturro, the list goes on.
All your favorite Lumen employees, their friends, families, enemies, in your feed every single weekday.
And here's the best part. After that, we're going to keep going. Tune in weekly as we recap every episode of season 2. The podcast drops on the same day the episode comes out.
It's the Severance Podcast with Ben and Adam.
On Apple Podcasts, the Odyssey app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've provided here today. You all stick around. There's 2 more hours of the Shaletta Show coming up.